Matthew chapter 16 is where we're going to look at this passage from the Gospels. Matthew chapter 16, we're not going to be looking at the maps tonight. Matthew chapter 16, we're going to be in verse 21 to 33. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 21. Remember, Jesus traveled north from Magdala, just on the tip, the western tip of the Sea of Galilee. If you can find the most western place, kind of on that bubble on the north, Jesus was there. And then last Sunday, he went from there and he traveled 30 miles north up to Caesarea Philippi. And so he's there, and Jesus is spending some time there, certainly wanting to make an impact on his disciples. And last Sunday night, Jesus asked the question of, who do others say that I am? And so there was a variety of answers of who they said Jesus was, and then, of course, Jesus asked the question, well, whom do you say that I am? And, of course, Simon Peter answered the question, and he answered the question very well, that he said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And of course, God had blessing for him. Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And of course, he goes through and said, Peter, you little stone, you little rock, upon you I'm going to, not you, but upon me I'm going to build my church. The big rock, not the little rock, not the little stone. I'm going to build my church, and the gates of hell would not prevail against it. And we looked at some foundational truths of the church last week. Very important. And so, hope that you're able to get that. If not, don't forget, I'll just put a plug in for our CD ministry, and they're online as well. So if you ever miss something you want to hear about what you missed, go and find that CD or go online, and many of those messages are on there. But foundations to the church. Of course, the foundation of the church is who? Jesus. Jesus is the rock. He's the solid rock upon which he's the chief cornerstone which the church is built upon. But remember, the rock has gave himself to us as little rocks, like kind of like Peter, along with the apostles, and very foundational upon belief, upon a group of people that believe, and some other things that we looked at last week. And so he's just got done with that, and he charged his disciples in verse 20. Again, Matthew chapter 16, and in verse 20, he ended that section by charging them that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ, okay? And we can address that question or concern of why did he say that, maybe another time, but he tells them not to tell anybody. And so now his disciples hear this, and okay, so it's been confirmed. Who do you say that I am? And there's a variety of answers. And Peter answers, and he said, you're right, Peter, I am the one. And you are the Christ, the Son. And so now, if there is any doubt in any of these disciples, they've heard it now, once and for all. They know that he is the Christ. He is the one. So they knew, and it was for sure. And that's where we enter this section, verse 21. Notice, as we start to look at that, by the way, let me go ahead and give you the preliminaries before we get into this passage. If you're looking at the parallel passages, of course, we're looking at Matthew 16, 21 to 33 tonight. That's Matthew's going to be our gospel that we're going to stay at. The other two are fairly short, Mark 8, 31 to 33, and then Luke chapter 9, verse 22, just one verse there. And so, again, we're going to be looking in Matthew, as we did last week, as the kind of the more complete gospel rendition of this section. So, go back to Matthew chapter 16, and let's pick up in verse 21. So, they just, okay, so for sure, he's the Christ. And notice in verse 21, from that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. So obviously this is a an emphasis time where Jesus is really going to start to pour into his disciples of what is going to take place that would end Jesus' life as a human, at least on the earth during this time. He starts to tell them. He starts to be intense about it. Okay, this is what's going to happen. He's preparing them because, as we know, when we look at some of the passages in the New Testament, that especially John, remember we went through John 13 to 17, that he really tried to get them prepared even the night before. Listen, this is going to happen, and tomorrow's the day, or tonight's the night, and this is going to happen. And remember, the disciples were scared. They didn't know what was going to happen. They felt like they were going to be left alone. And so Jesus is telling them all that's going to take place. It took them a long time to get it. And I don't even think that they got it until years later, even after Jesus had died. And they began to see the fruits of the ministry and see the church get started. And they started getting the inspiration from God. And writing the scriptures, that they really start to understand really the full story of everything. We are very blessed people that we have the completed scriptures and that everything is done a long time ago and we can see it now back a long time ago of what it was. And so what a blessing that we have the completed scriptures. So they're just trying to understand all these things. And so now Jesus is going to try to give them more. Now, think about this. The disciples who, you know, Jesus said, you know, drop your nets and come and follow me, and we're going to be fishers of men, and I'm going to... And they're thinking, oh, he's the Christ. He's the Son of God. In a sense, you know, they're Jewish thinking he's the Messiah, maybe. They're going through all of this, and he begins to intensely tell them that he's going to suffer and be put on trial and going to die. That was hard news for them to take. What? You're going to die? You're going to go before these people and you're going to be killed and raised again the third day? They struggled with that. There was usually one spokesman that spoke up. And his name? Peter. Okay, Simon Peter. And so Peter speaks up, and he's got, this cannot be, no way. And we notice in verse 22, then Peter took him. Notice the words that are used. Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. Stop. Okay, how many of you have ever gotten frustrated? Okay, you don't need to raise your hand. It's a part of our lives. We get frustrated, don't we? We don't like a situation. We don't like what we hear. We don't like what somebody did. Maybe we don't like what we did. We get frustrated. Oh, I did it again, or I didn't do that very well. We don't like the circumstances in life. We don't like the things that are going on. We don't like maybe what's going on with our family. Maybe there's things in society that we struggle with. Maybe at work there's things that we discussed this morning that are not going well in that person, that group, that leadership, that whatever. And we get frustrated. And it's interesting how Jesus deals with the frustration. I think that not only will this passage help us to know how to deal with other people that are frustrated, but I think it will help us as we get frustrated to understand some things, perspectives that we need to have. Again, I'll say that I don't believe that Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 21, I don't think that the point of the passage is Jesus, you know, wanting to teach topically on frustration. That is not what the point is. But as we discover what Jesus is doing, where he goes, and he comes to a place and stops, there's a lot of lessons to learn of what he does there. And so, as I mentioned before, this is not a thorough study of how to deal with frustration. This is simply a passage that deals with Jesus dealing with Peter and the disciples in a frustrating time. Okay? All right. So Peter takes him and begins to rebuke him. It's a struggle for him. Would you understand why Peter's frustrated? This doesn't make sense. Why is this going on? Okay, so again, picture yourself there. There's frustration. How did Jesus deal with this? Okay, and he turned and said unto Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Now that is interesting. Can I stop and say, probably what this is meaning is not for you at work when your boss frustrates you is to turn to him and say, "Get behind me, Satan," okay? That wouldn't go over so well. And I don't think that's the point that Jesus is making here. But isn't it interesting that he looks at Peter? There's no denying that he looked at Peter. We see that, you know, he says, but he turned and said to Peter. So he turns, and there's Peter, you know, and I don't know. It doesn't say the motions that Jesus gave, but it is almost as if, you know, he might have, you know, "Get thee behind me." You know, I don't know if he pointed, but there's certainly a directive there towards Peter. But who is addressed? Satan is addressed. Now, we could get too far either way. I do believe that Jesus is telling Peter something. But I do believe there's something more to us to learn here about situations that are frustrating. Again, think about the times you get frustrated, specifically with people, not so much the circumstances themselves. You have something difficult that takes place, and I don't know why they do this. And there's things, and a lot of times, because we're humans, we tend to be very humanistic with our thinking. And when something goes wrong, we point our fingers, we look at them and say, "They did this," or "They did that." And we're very people-oriented when it comes to struggles. Okay? There's something that we need to understand. The first point is that the real enemy is not the individual. It's Satan. The real enemy is Satan. It really wasn't Peter. Now you say, "Pastor, but he was the one that said it." And Jesus did address Peter. I do believe that. But he says Satan. I don't think Peter or Jesus is calling Peter Satan. Satan was a name of Satan, okay? It was Satan. But Peter, in this case, was a tool being used, and Peter is being worldly right now in his thoughts. And we're going to talk about thoughts and perspective here in just a moment. But Jesus is coming head-to-head with Satan. He understands something, that the problem and the frustration is not coming from this person so much individually, but Satan is the one to deal with. Really quickly, take your Bibles and turn to Ephesians chapter 6. Keep your place here. We're just going to go quickly there. Something that would help you in your struggles with people, okay? People in your life that get you frustrated and you struggle with them, and it's that coworker at work, it's that maybe that relative that when you get together at family get-togethers that they're difficult. It's that individual that you have a hard time dealing with, and it almost seems like every time you're with them, you struggle. And they always are doing this. You know, there's a struggle. And maybe it's not even a person that always frustrates you. Maybe it's just a one-time deal, and you go in that day to a friend, and all of a sudden they let you have it, or this goes on. What's the deal? And I think Jesus helps us right here that Satan's the one that is the enemy. Ephesians chapter 6, I want you to notice verse, did I pick the right? I don't think I picked the right verse. Where am I at? Hold on a second. It's verse 12. I just put a 2 instead of a 1 there, not 22, verse 12, okay? Notice what verse 12 says. Okay, Jesus or God is telling the people that they need to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might, put on the whole armor of God that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of who? The devil, okay? He's identified as the enemy, and then he tells us who the enemy is not. Verse 12, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. What does that mean, flesh and blood? We battle not against flesh and blood. What does that mean? It's not that individual that is the problem. Honestly, it's not, folks. When there's a problem, it's the devil trying to work. And I know you could say, well, it's, you know, they're being used. And Peter was being used right now, and Peter had some things to change in his mind. But understand, folks, that when there are struggles, what we need to be doing is not casting out that person, but God, I need you to be victorious over the devil right here, because the devil is trying to win some battles. Not to take the blame off of people, because people do have issues and we have issues. And when it's referring to us, we don't say the devil made me do it and it's just the devil. You know, when I'm the one that's doing wrong and I'm being a pain to somebody else, it's not right to say, well, it's the devil, not me. But from the other person's perspective, when somebody is, it's a struggle situation, a very helpful thing to understand is, wait a second. My enemy is not that individual. It's not my coworker. It's not my daughter. It's not my neighbor. The enemy is who? It's the devil. It's Satan. My friends, I want to tell you something. That's important to understand, because when it's a person, let's say Carrie is, you know, we're working on a project together here at church, and boy, he's really doing something, and I start thinking about Carrie, and Carrie's the one, then it gets me off guard, and it puts things between us that the Bible says are devilish. Strife comes in between, and all I do is look at him. And brothers and sisters, this is a work of the devil. The devil loves to work in, you know, through people and mess some things up so that we will get strife between us. He loves to do that, and he loves to do it with relationships and fellowships with people. That's why it's so difficult. You ever stopped and wondered why it's so difficult to deal with people? And I'll tell you, because the devil works, and he uses relationships and fellowships, and he tries to destroy them. When dealing with people, we must recognize the real enemy. It's not my neighbor. It's not my daughter. It's not my uncle. It's not this. It's the devil. It's not people. That will help us a lot. It will help us to understand, wait a second, we are battling against, as verse 12 says back in Ephesians 6, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. One of the first things to deal with when there's a frustrating situation is to take the emphasis off of the person. What happens when we keep the emphasis on the person? I already told you there's strife. What tends to come from strife? We're going to end up in bitterness. And bitterness destroys. Bitterness will destroy you, my friend, and it will destroy no one else but you. It eats on you from the inside out. Bitterness, a lot of times, is that person we look at and we try to hurt them, and all it ends up doing is hurting us. It's a self-destroyer. We need to be so careful at looking at people. You know, those brothers with Joseph, they looked at Joseph and they looked and they were getting destroyed themselves. They were the ones that were eaten up with their own bitterness. They got frustrated with the situation, and they tend to look at people instead of recognizing the real enemy. Brothers and sisters, I encourage you to look at the real enemy. You remember the words that Jesus commanded Satan to leave in Matthew chapter 4 when he was tempted? And he quoted scripture, and he said some things very similar to this. Get thee behind me, Satan. Okay, he says that, and he recognizes the enemy there. Understand this, number one, that frustration comes directly from the devil. The devil loves to destroy relationships. Another passage really quickly that you can turn to is James chapter 3. Go to James chapter 3 very quickly, just to see a struggle that is there. There's the tongue issues, and then right out of the tongue issues, then he talks about a wise man and dude with knowledge among you. Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if he, this is verse 14, by the way, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. This passage is speaking about situations where strife comes in and there's pride issues and there's things that get in between you and you're frustrated with people. And God here very clearly says this mentality comes from the devil. There it is, brothers. It comes from the devil. It will help you to understand in your frustrated situation. Wait a second. They're not the enemy. No, this is devilish. This is coming from the devil. This is coming from the pit of hell. And so we've got to fight it with God's armor, Ephesians chapter 6. This is spiritual warfare. It's not person warfare. Does that make sense? The enemy is not the person. That will help you, brothers and sisters, with frustration. Okay? Do spiritual warfare, not people warfare. All right, let's look at the next thing here. And so we're in Matthew chapter 16. Jesus right away identifies, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me." There's an interesting phrase there. Thou art an offense unto me. The second thing I want you to see is the situation is either for or against, okay? And I'll catch up to speed what I mean here with that in just a moment. For or against. Peter, who had just confessed Christ, is now being a tool against the Lord. He's referred to as an offense to me. Okay, yes, he addresses Satan, and you know, Peter, you're an offense to me. You just were for me, and now you're against me. Interesting in situations in life that we get frustrated. We can either believe and edify, or we cannot believe and hinder, or offend, or be offended. You realize when we're dealing with people, the way we act, there's really no neutral ground. We're either edifying and lifting somebody up, or we're either hurting them and destroying them. That's the way it is. We're either helping them or hurting them. A lot of times people think, well, what if it's just neutral? You know, God says to edify, and if we're very neutral in the matter, then we're not helping them, we're being disobedient. It's one or the other. We've got to be a help or a hindrance. You know, in the beginning, Peter recognizes that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and there's very positive. And now he looks and I don't know if he grabbed Jesus, but he says that he gets a hold of Jesus and he rebukes him. This is not true. He's frustrated, and all of a sudden he is against and not for. We need to be very careful as we are frustrated with things. When we get frustrated with things in life, it's the cause of unbelief. Or it comes from unbelief. Unbelief in a God that has everything together for good and causes everything together for good. When we are frustrated, we go against His truth of who He is and what He's ordained and what He's given to us with other humans and people. You know, when we get frustrated, what we're doing is just like Peter. You know, we come to church and we sing good songs, and then we get frustrated. We don't think that God's in control. We don't trust Him and what He's doing, and this is a mistake, and that person has messed me up. You ever had a situation come into your life when somebody really did something to you, and it was so frustrating? We need to be careful, because we know that God is working all things together for good. Frustration comes from unbelief. We don't trust God that He's doing something good. We don't trust that person maybe is in my life to help me with something. Like Peter, we end up going against the truth and we become frustrated in our unbelief. That so much ties into this last point I want you to see here. Peter is referred to as, you know, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me." Notice what Jesus says here to end the verse. "For thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." To savor is to understand, to be harmonious in view. He says here that thou savorest not. You don't understand. You don't understand in harmony what is really being done here. You don't understand the things of God. You're only looking at the human level. You know, frustration comes a lot of times because we have such a human, earthly perspective on things. something happens and we get frustrated. And again, there's all kinds. Every person gets frustrated over all kinds of different things. You get frustrated that tomorrow you had big plans and it rains like crazy. You get frustrated, and I'll tell you, we don't understand. We're not on the equal plane with God's doing things. Let me ask you a question. Can God use the rain in your life to prevent things that would be bad for you? He can. God can cause a storm to prevent you from going somewhere. I've often thought, when God has prevented me from going, I wonder what would have happened if I would have gone. And then later you hear about the accident on the road that you were on, or the deer that ran out in front, and somebody else. Why was I delayed? And you know what? Sometimes you want to get home, or you want to get to that place, and there was the delay, and there was traffic, and we get frustrated. You know, this isn't happening. And God says, you know what, Peter? You don't understand where I'm at. You know, frustration is because we are not on God's plane. We're on our own plane. All we can see is what's right out there, and we're not looking and seeking those things which are above. Frustration often comes because we don't have God's perspective on things. So God can cause the rain to delay me. God can cause certain things to happen. God can allow whatever for things to happen. God can give certain advice. You know, I found it interesting before that, you know, God says in the multitude of counselors are safety, and you go, and then somebody tells you something that seems to be a little bit different. Oh no, did God mess up with his counsel? And I want to tell you, brothers and sisters, that he didn't. And there was something that was there that you needed to take and learn. You're going to have to make a choice either way, but God wanted something for you to hear. It's a plane that we've got to get on. We've got to understand, and it will change everything in life when you understand that God's doing a perfect work. So many times we go to frustration because all we see is what's in front of our eyeballs, right here. And we have no clue of the world that is out there, that is above. Colossians chapter 3, turn there quickly. You've heard me use this illustration many times. Colossians chapter 3 in verse 1. This is very good, and that's why I share it so many times, because this transforms our Christian lives. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 1. And Peter needed to understand this. Paul writes in Colossians chapter 3, verse 1, if ye then be risen with Christ. Okay, what's he saying there? If you're a Christian, if you're saved, and hopefully you are, if you're a Christian here tonight, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on his right hand. Set your affection on the things above and not on the things of earth. Doesn't that sound like the verbiage in what Jesus just told Peter? Peter, you've got these desires, you've got this thought process, you've got all these things that are very much down here. You're scared to death of them killing me. Now think about that. Who did Peter just say Jesus was? Christ, the Son of God, right? He recognizes deity. He recognizes this is God's very Son. And now he says, Jesus, you are wrong. He's so earthly minded. He's looking at things. He doesn't even understand. Wait a second. He's talking to God. He's talking to Jesus. Brothers and sisters, I want to tell you something. In this world, we get very earthly minded. We get very... our vision is on a plane. And it's this plane right here. We see what's in front of us. Let me ask you a question. Are there a lot of things going on beyond this plane? There are. Now we could joke a little bit, and some of you shorter people, there's a lot going on this plane that some of us taller, well, not some of us, I'm not one of those, okay? There's some of us that are kind of down here, you know, 5'8 and below, we've got this plane right here, we only see these things. Some of you that have surpassed and are giants, you know, you're 5'8 and a half or taller, okay? You have another plane, and you see some things that we don't see. And then there's the giants out there that are really tall, and you see all kinds of things. You've got your own perspective. Are there other things beyond your perspective that you see? Actually, there are. You know, there could be some things that are going on behind this right here that you wouldn't know because you don't have that perspective. But yeah, you come back here and you would see another whole ball game of what's taking place here. Perspective is everything. We tend to look at the perspective. I look at a perspective of 5'8.5". That's what I see. Somebody shorter has a perspective. You know, my little Nehemiah, 3 years old, he's got a perspective that's about right here. And this is what he sees. Okay, this is what he sees. He's got to climb up on something if he's going to see another perspective. And for some of you who are taller, your perspective is up here, and yet to know the truth about things, you got to get down and look at what's really going on here. We've got some little places in our house underneath the stairs. There's a little cubby hole back in there. The kids can crawl in like that. You know what? If I don't go take a perspective that's down low and crawl in there, I might know about a big mess that's been there for a long time. You never know what you're going to find down there. Why? Because I don't live on that plane. You know, now it's a little bit, not joking, but you understand what I mean about the planes of from here to here. But folks, it's not even talking about that. It's an earthly plane where we look, and we just have this earthly mind. And I'll tell you, when we look, when our plane of sight and understanding is earthly, it will produce, can anybody tell me what the word is? Frustration. You'll be frustrated because there's a lot that's going on in the world that's not in this plane. It's in another plane. And I've used the illustration of a plane, an airplane. If you've ever flown before, you know that there's a different world when you go up. On this world, you're rushing around, you're trying to get to the airport as quick as you can, so you get there and you get your, you know, checked in, your luggage checked in, and you get there and you go through security and you make it, and you get there and here it is. And then all of a sudden you get on the plane and there it is, and it's a different world. It's especially a different world if you've been traveling on a day when there's been dreary and it's rainy and it's cloudy, and you take off and it's raining. You start to climb, and then you go, and then everything kind of disappears, and you go into the clouds, and you can't see anything, and you're having to trust. But then there's a point in time where the nose of that plane penetrates through the upper level of the clouds, and you go in, and there's another world. Do some of you know what I'm talking about? You ever flown like that? And you've gone into that new world. It's like, wow. And if you've never flown before and never gone through that, it's an amazing thing. Now, I don't suggest you go buy a plane ticket just to make the realization of the illustration. But if you ever get a chance to do it, it's a neat thing. Because it's another world up there. And then there's the sun shining. And it's just a wonderful place. And down below, it's still raining. It's still cloudy. It's still there. You know what God is saying in Colossians 3? What he's telling Peter is, he says, Peter, you need to start thinking on another plane. You are a Christian. I've brought you to me. You've got to start thinking the way I think. You've got to start understanding that things in life are done for a purpose, and I'm in control, and I'm sovereign. I got everything taken care of. Folks, if we would have a new plane of thinking, it would take away our frustrations. So you're an individual that gets frustrated. And Jesus says, you need to go to another plane of thinking. You need to start understanding the way I do things. If Peter would have been thinking on the plane of Jesus, would he needed to be alarmed that Jesus was going to go and be on trial and to die? Now I understand. He said, Pastor, those people didn't understand. No, but Jesus told him, Peter, you're thinking very earthly minded. You just testified that I'm God. Now act like it. Let me be God in your lives. And brothers and sisters, I say this. God has saved you. He's given you eternity in heaven. He's given you a home in heaven. This world is not our home. We're just passing through. But God calls us to think differently. And when that frustrating thing comes, make sure that you don't look at them as the enemy. Make sure, you know, as you're going through life circumstances, that you realize that as you allow yourself to be a part of this, then you're actually working against God. Understand that in life, when difficult things happen, that He's just wanting you to have a different perspective and look at what God is doing with it. I'll tell you what, it would really help us in our frustration to have a godly perspective. Understanding it's not people. Be for, so that I'm not against. Trust Him, knowing that He is doing a good work. Frustration comes when we are of another perspective. God says, if you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. You know what? Where Christ sits on the right hand of God is a good place. God's in control. God's got everything taken care of. I don't need to be frustrated. I don't need to worry, because He knows what's best. Set your affections on things above, not on the things of this earth. Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. Again, not a thorough study on frustration. But there are some things from this passage that Jesus deals with. A frustrated individual gives him some good things that will help Peter to become Peter that wrote so many wonderful truths in the Word of God that we are enjoying on Sunday mornings. You know, God used Peter. God could use you. You say, Pastor, I'm a frustrated individual. God could use you. But let's take the teaching lessons of Christ and let's become godly thinkers from a godly perspective. Father, thank you for the truths that you've given to us tonight from your word. They've been good for us. They're challenging. We tend to get frustrated. Lord, help us. Help us to trust you. God, deal with us. I pray that not only would you convict us, I trust that's already happened, but then we would decide as we discover the truth that there's something we need to obey. Coming up with something doable, tangible, realistic this week so that we can get victory over this area. Lord, maybe there's somebody we can share this with that has problems with frustration. Lord, would you give us those souls this week? Would you give us divine appointments, people that we can share the gospel with? And may our conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ. Lord, thank you so much for what you've given to us today. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's take our songbooks.